His freedom was his freedom to love the woman that he wanted to love and to love her even though her physical life has ceased, but he still lives in that love. It's the freedom to have that spirit which is not killed even when his body is pulled into pieces.
Welcome to Simply Scottish. I'm your host, Andrew McDermott. On this episode, I'm sharing with you part two of my interview with Braveheart writer and Academy Award nominee, Randall Wallace. First, if you like the Simply Scottish podcast, consider supporting the show on our new Patreon portal. For the price of a few coffees a month, you'll help me produce more episodes and reach more listeners around the world. You'll also get to tap into a growing collection of content available exclusively to Patreon subscribers, including bonus episodes, articles I write, the ability to have me answer your Scotland-related questions on the show, free shortbread on your birthday, quarterly virtual hangouts, and more. Get the details and sign up today at patreon.com/simplyscottish. That's patreon.com/simplyscottish. And I thank you for your support. Don't forget also to follow Simply Scottish on socials, Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram, to get updates on new content, new episodes, and other goodies. In part one of my interview with Randall, I talked about the impact the movie Braveheart had on me. Let me recap just a bit for those who have not heard that episode yet. In 1995, I was a young 16-year-old immigrant from Scotland, trying to navigate life in my adopted land and figure out exactly what I left behind, what it meant to be Scottish. I was working at my local movie theatre in South Texas, and that summer, a movie came out that had a huge impact on me. In larger-than-life detail, it told the story of William Wallace and Scotland's fight for independence. Watching the movie, tears streaming down my face, a fire ignited in me that continues to burn brightly today. It's the reason I started Simply Scottish as a radio show with my father in 1999. The movie, of course, is Braveheart, starring and directed by Mel Gibson. The film was nominated for 10 Academy Awards that year, and won 5, including Best Picture. One of the nominations went to Randall Wallace for Best Original Screenplay. So, you can imagine I was very excited to have the opportunity recently to spend an hour with Randall Wallace. In part one of our conversation, we talked about Braveheart, naturally, how he discovered William Wallace's story in Scotland during a trip, and how writing the movie changed his life. We also discussed his successful career as a Hollywood movie director and screenwriter. In today's second half of the interview, we explore how all of us can live the Braveheart life by reviewing the lessons Randall teaches in his memoir, Living the Braveheart Life. That includes how to live in freedom, the importance of fathers, teachers, and mentors, and how to be a warrior, and even an outlaw, in today's challenging times. And for those who'd like to watch the full conversation, I've posted the video on my YouTube channel. Find it by entering my handle into the YouTube search bar. It's at Andrew_McDermott. That's youtube.com/@Andrew_McDermott. Let's set the stage with a little music. This is a new song from Highland accordionist and vocalist Callum MacPhail. I recently did an interview with author Lynn Gallaudner for her Make Meaning podcast. We talked about how Simply Scottish got started. It's actually a funny story. What inspires me to keep going with it, and why Scotland is loved by so many around the world. It was actually Lynn that told me about Callum MacPhail's music. So, for the first time, I'm adding MacPhail to the lineup. This is Let Your Love Flow on Simply Scottish.
There's a reason for the sunshine sky. There's a reason why I'm feeling so high. Must be the season when the lovely shines all around us. So let that feeling grab you deep inside and send a real love where your love can't hide and can steal it. Through the moonlit nights with your lover. So let the love grow, like a man in a dream. Just let the love grow, the smallest of dreams. Let the love show, and you'll know what I mean. It's the season. So let the love fly, like a bird on the wing. Just let the love bind you to all living things. Let the love shine, and you'll know what I mean. That's the reason. There's a reason for the warm sweet nights. There's a reason for the candlelight. Must be the season when the love light shines all around us. So let that wonder take you into this space and lay you under its loving embrace. Must feel the thunder as it warms your face. You can't hold back. Like a man in a dream, just let the love grow. Smallest of dreams, let the love show. And you'll know what I mean, it's the season. So let the love fly, like a bird I wing. Just let the love paint you to all living things. Let the love shine, and you'll know what I mean, that's the reason.
I want to talk about this for a little bit, living the Braveheart life. When I saw this, I thought, oh my gosh, this is amazing, you know? And indeed it is. It's part autobiography, it's part masterclass. In this book, you're telling how Braveheart came to be a reality in your life, how long it took to write it, the story, the journey of bringing it to the screen. And you go on and you tell us how to live that Braveheart life, how to be a father and a teacher and a sage and a warrior and indeed an outlaw. So I think it's an awesome resource that you've put together. How did you decide to do this? Was it just an itch that you had to satisfy?
Yes, it was something that I felt people might like. I don't really have a sense that I can judge what people will like. The only way I know to approach that is to ask what I like. And I thought it would be a good experience, a good exploration for me to try to understand not how to tell other people to live a Braveheart life, but to understand what a Braveheart life is for myself. To look at the experiences that I had, what you were just saying about God's plan and our plan, it rings so true to me that God's plan is better than mine. And I could have never envisioned, could have never sat down and written out a master vision for where my life was going to go, maybe in vague terms. And that's the value of doing something like that, to explore philosophical things. But I really do mean in a concrete sense. I didn't come to Los Angeles with any ambition of being in the movie business. And I didn't realize when I started in the movie business where that was going to lead. And say, the first time I said hello to the woman that I married and had children with, and I've got three sons, and I didn't say hello because I was looking to have children. I just said hello because I thought, felt like a good idea at the time. And I'm really glad I did. And Kenny Chesney is a friend of mine. I don't get to see him very often because he travels so much, but we do a workout together. And Kenny was telling me about, I think he feels in our California group, I have a particular appreciation for what he does and what a great country song is, even though I wasn't really a writer of country songs, or at least according to the labels that we use. But he told me about a great country song about a grandfather. I'm glad he had the nerve. I'm glad my grandfather had the nerve to walk up to my grandmother when he didn't know her. And glad my father had the nerve. And even those men that fought wars, you know, our ancestors that risked their lives and gave us the lives that we have. Such an incredible experience.
Yeah, and that's part of what we celebrate when we celebrate people's stories and their achievements and experiences is not just what they did, but that they had the nerve to do it, that they stepped forward and did, as a certain Frozen song says, do the next right thing, you know?
Yes.
They did the next right thing. They did what it took, you know? Well, you've put this together and you've unpacked some of the things that it means to be a warrior. In Braveheart, young Wallace's uncle, Argyle, you know, he becomes a father figure and a teacher to him after he loses his own dad. And you write in this book that we teach and we learn and we seldom know at the time which is which. And I think that's a really good insight. You know, I was a teacher in the classroom for 6 years. And I'll tell you, from the get-go, they were teaching me as much as I was teaching them. And I was learning as I went, you know, fake it till you make it kind of idea. You know, I was doing the next right thing, and sooner or later I was just learning the ropes of how to be a teacher. But it's so important to have a teacher and be a teacher to others. Can you speak to that?
Oh, wow. Yeah. I mean, I think the greatest teachers are constant students. And that may be part of the greatest lesson that they're imparting, is that they're learning and they're showing that to their students. Well, we've talked about the father-child relationship, but there's also the people like Uncle Argyle who step in as mentors and guides, and how deep that relationship is. There have been a number of people in my life who became my mentors, and it's a different relationship than being a friend. And you almost don't want your mentor to be a friend. You want them to be in that place where they put the lesson higher than whether you are comfortable with them or not. I've got a friend a couple of friends have been that I've known through most all our lives. And one of them was so competitive that he would be utterly miserable if he was losing. And the two of them were really good at ping pong. And one could beat the other at least half the time. But he told me there were times when he would lose because he saw the other guy getting so upset, he just felt it wasn't worth beating him. And thought, wow, that now we can argue about whether friends would do that and should do that, but mentors won't do that. You know, a mentor will say, what you are doing right now is going to make you lose. It's going to cost you something. And I'm going to tell you that truth, whether that means you don't like me or not. It's not about you liking me. So I think it's a profoundly important relationship about mentors. And I think in some ways in society, we're afraid of that too, and losing some of that because we want our potential people who could be our mentors become too generic and too afraid to step in too close to another life. And I understand that there are boundaries in that, but the greatest mentors in my life have had a profound influence on me, and they've been willing to step into a relationship that risks disappointment, that, you know, that they become invested enough in you that they do really care whether or not what they've taught you is going to work. And they have to ask themselves, is this, like, I used to teach karate in college, and I loved martial arts, and I loved teaching other people how to defend themselves. But when I would have students come in who were truly vulnerable, I would feel this enormous responsibility about teaching them what would actually work. I needed to teach them how to save their own lives if necessary. And that required a different level of commitment.
Yeah, friends are wonderful, but that mentoring relationship is so beautiful because it goes beyond friendship. And as you were talking about it, it made me think of the parent responsibility. Quite a similar thing. As we're mentoring, as we're raising our kids, we're not their friends. And you start to make mistakes when you want to be their friend and make them feel good and give them everything that you want to give them. You will miss out on the opportunity to really teach them the lessons they need. It's not always what we want, it's what we need. So yeah, especially important to have mentors. And you can tell that Argyle doesn't have, you know, a dying need to do this, but he steps into it nevertheless because he has courage and he sees the need and he loves young Wallace and he fills that role, you know?
Yes, exactly right. We all need an Uncle Argyle. I'll tell you a quick story. I know Jack Harbaugh, Jack and Jackie Harbaugh, who are the parents of the two Harbaughs who are coaches in, you know, one a coach at Michigan, another coach in the pros, and the two brothers, the only two brothers who ever coached against each other in a Super Bowl. And my two older sons are in business with me, and I, you know, I want to be the right father and the right leader of our company as well. And I said to Jack Harbaugh, the father of these two spectacularly successful coaches, how do you handle being a coach, a mentor to your sons, and being a father? How do you see those two roles? And he said, wow, interesting you asked me that. He said, I was coaching at Stanford, and John Elway's father would come to practice long after John Elway was in the Football Hall of Fame and great player, just one of the greatest ever. And his dad would come back to where his son had played and sit in the stands and watch the practices. So Jack Harbaugh climbed up into the bleachers one day and sat down beside John Elway's father and asked him exactly the same question that I had just asked Jack. And I said, well, so what did he say? And he said, well, Elway's father looked at me and said, you know, in your son's lives, they'll have many mentors, many people to correct them, to challenge them, to drive them forward. They've only got one father. All you do is love them. Okay, that's a beautiful, beautiful thing. Great reminder. But there are also times when we as fathers have to be their mentor. We have to correct them. We have to guide them. I mean, it's right there in the Bible that to not give your children shape and discipline and boundaries and order is to truly handicap them. So it's that challenge to do something in the most loving possible way.
And as we are parents, we also have this relationship with God, and we you know, we can parent because he's our parent, and he is giving us those lessons, and that gives us the ability to share those with our kids. But it's hard, isn't it? It's really hard. You got to pick up your cross daily because it's tough work.
Yeah, and I think being a Father helps me understand something more of God. And I believe believing in God and trying to listen to God helps us be better parents. It's just got to be.
Absolutely. Well, I'd like to finish up with just talk of freedom. Freedom is such a big thing in Braveheart. You know, we all remember that scene where he yells freedom at his execution, and it comes out in the battle speeches that he gives to the soldiers on the battlefield. Freedom is the theme in Braveheart, at least one of the big ones. And the Wallace family crest actually says pro libertate, for freedom. It played such a big role in Wallace's story and indeed your life. For the last 5 years, I've been studying the role of technology in our lives. And I came across a French theologian and philosopher of technology named Jacques Ellul. And he was an awesome guy. You know, not only was he a Christian, he loved the Lord. He also wanted to study deeply how technology was impacting us and give people the ability to affirm their freedom in a technological society, which I think we need more now than ever. Well, he wrote a couple things I wanted to share with you. He wrote, "The denizen of the technological state of the future will have everything his heart ever desired, except, of course, his freedom." And he also said, "When we become conscious of that which determines our life, we attain the highest degree of freedom." Would you agree with those sentiments? How can we affirm our freedom in this digital age that we find ourselves in?
Well, I do agree with the statements. And that last question is such a great one. The interplay of freedom and responsibility is, to me, a central aspect of truth. Freedom, to me, must be defined. It has to do with a faith, with a willingness to make choices, and to make choices that have outcomes that we can't necessarily determine. That, therefore, there are choices that must be made in faith. That's the best way I know how to say it right now. That William Wallace, in screaming freedom at that moment in Braveheart, is to me affirming that a certain choice to live that way. He's screaming freedom as his bowels are being cut out of his body and his body is about to be torn into pieces. His freedom was his freedom to love the woman that he wanted to love and to love her even though her physical life has ceased, but he still lives in that love. It's the freedom to have that spirit which is not killed even when his body is pulled into pieces. And that spirit lives again in Robert the Bruce and in the Queen and in Hamish and Stephen and even in the crowd that moments before was screaming for his death. It's that choice. So it's not just freedom meaning an undefined endless opportunity. It's freedom to choose specifically and commit to that mystery. Maybe that sounds like a lot of words, but that's the way I understand it now, Andrew.
Yeah, no, that's a beautiful way to put it. And it's almost like he couldn't say anything else but that, right?
Right.
And I think it's awesome. And you make me think that, and you remind me that even though he was confined by what the English were doing to his country at the time and confined by the choice that he had to fight, he still felt and experienced that freedom in his life through the choices he made, doing the next right thing, loving freely, and fighting for his country. So even though Scotland wasn't free yet, he was free, right? Because he lived God's purpose in his life, and he felt that freedom firsthand. I think that's a beautiful part of the story.
There's a verse that you may know well, but I don't actually know where it comes from. I saw it when I would go into Scottish stores that would have kilt pins that would have your family crest on them and things like that. And it's the verse is something like, "From the lonely sheeling of the misty isles, mountains divide us and a waste of seas. But still the blood is strong, the heart is Highland, and we in dreams behold the Hebrides." And that's what Braveheart became for me, it also, to me, points to the deepest truths I know and to heaven. And we were talking about, I have friends I love, who would call themselves atheists, and some would call themselves agnostic, or they call themselves by any number of different labels. The thing to me is, when I look at the historical realities, such as C.S. Lewis calling himself an atheist through much of his life, and I think, well, he was trying to give the most honest answer he could. He was trying to live in integrity. And maybe he's saying, I'm an atheist in the sense of the man in the Bible who says to Jesus, I believe, Lord, help my unbelief. Maybe it's a cry to believe. Maybe it's not. But I don't think God has to see us the way we see ourselves. And in fact, I think it's the opposite, that God sees us in ways far beyond the way we see ourselves. So C.S. Lewis saying he's an atheist was a step along his journey toward becoming the champion of the Christian faith. St. Paul was doing what he would have said was exactly what God wanted him to do in hunting down Christians. And it was on the road to do that that he became changed. And that's the part that I believe that William Wallace and me writing him that way was affirming in shouting freedom, even when whatever is pulling us apart, I mean internally ourselves pulling us apart and pulling us apart from other people, it can be age, it can be addictions, it can be all sorts of things that we would call sin. But whatever is pulling us apart, we always have that opportunity to cry out for God, to cry out the truth as we can best articulate it. That's how I see it.
And that is a beautiful reminder that God is the master storyteller. You know, we see parts of our life as we're moving through, and we're convinced that we're this or we're that at any given moment. And he sees us throughout the whole story. You know, he's not bound by time. And that's amazing. That's an amazing assurance we have as believers, that he's the master storyteller, telling our story, allowing us to live it, but that we can turn to him to see the full picture, you know? Yes. We're not bound by just this one moment. Yes. That's encouraging.
Yes. God is telling us our story and his.
It's awesome. It's great to be a part of. Well, I know you work with your sons. One of your sons has a podcast, and you're blessed to be able to work with them. What are some of the current projects that you're involved in?
Well, so yes, my son Andrew is doing a great podcast. We have a problem, no an opportunity, and my son Cullen is doing some incredibly exciting things for me in the animation world. He's teamed up with a brilliant owner of an animation company, and I'm super excited to see what they do. I've been working a lot with music, and posting some of the hymns on YouTube. I did one called Praise Ye the Lord, something that I wrote and recorded in my home studio. And I had the sense that what we need to do in the face of so much fear is actually celebrate and be grateful. So I've been doing that. I've lately been writing. I've got several projects in various forms ready to go. One that I'm really eager to do with Henry Cavill, called Love and Honor, based on one of my books. And I've been doing a project called The Swiss Guard, about the men who guard the Pope. And I'm currently writing the story of Hannibal, so in the ancient world. So I've got a whole lot of things to stay busy doing.
That's awesome. Yeah, those projects sound wonderful. I'm looking forward to seeing more results from that. Well, Randall, once again, I will thank you for your work in allowing Braveheart to come out of you, that awesome story. I want to thank you for reminiscing and sharing the lessons of it in this awesome book, and just for your time today, just unpacking the experiences of storytelling and the creative life and living out God's purpose. It's an amazing journey you've had, and I'm proud to be able to share it with my listeners and viewers.
Thank you so much, Andrew. God bless you, brother, and I'll see you down the road. Thank you.
That was the second half of my conversation with Braveheart writer Randall Wallace. Don't miss part one of the interview, where Randall recounts the trip to Scotland that introduced him to William Wallace, and what he learned throughout his career as a Hollywood blockbuster screenwriter and director. Remember, you can watch the full video interview on my YouTube channel, youtube.com/@Andrew_McDermott. And if you want instant access to bonus episodes and articles available only to subscribers, hop on over to our Patreon portal and see how you can become a friend, a patron, or a guardian of Simply Scottish. That's at patreon.com/simplyscottish. Let's close with music from acclaimed Scottish fiddle player John McCusker, who celebrates 3 decades in the music industry with a brand new album called John McCusker, The Best Of. The double album features tracks from his last 30 years and a few new ones. It also has contributions from lots of well-known Scottish musicians, including Phil Cunningham, James McIntosh, Capper Cayley's Ewan Vernal, and even comedian Billy Connolly on vocals and autoharp. This track I'm playing is called The Big Man Set, and it's a rather perfect way to close out our time together. I'm Andrew McDermott. Join me again soon for more of All Things Scottish. Until then, be of good cheer, and thanks for listening.
Simply Scottish is hosted and produced by Andrew McDermott. Show content, copyright, Simply Scottish Media. All music is used with consent of copyright holders. Continue your Simply Scottish experience at simplyscottish.com. Thanks for listening.